The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
For some reason, I don't know, the Bluetooth kicked in, but it was still playing my music. I don't know, weird.
Steve. May I remind you for the thousandth time on this podcast that you are the technical guy on this podcast, yeah?
Yeah, apologies for that.
Are you in your car, Stephen?
Yeah, sorry, I've got a few things to do because I got a busy weekend, so I'm kind of out and about, but it's fine.
This is not fine, Steve, this is ridiculous. Why can't you sort the sound out?
You hear me?
It sounds like you're a little person in a tube.
Which kind of you are?
In a toilet roll tube. Steve, can you get any closer? Yeah. Can we hear you better?
Is that better?
Not particularly, no.
Good, because I didn't do anything different.
Yeah, you didn't touch anything. You just said, is that better?
I love it.
I used to do that. We used to record interviews down at ISDN sometimes for radio stations. They'd say, can't hear you. Hang on, a sec. And just to do nothing. Say, is that better? Yeah, that's better. Thanks. I still do it now when I do interviews. Yeah. People say, I can't hear you. And I thought, they can hear me. Just not used to it.
I know a guy at Brains, and he showed some designs for a new pub layout to the top guy. And the guy was like, oh, no, these aren't any good. Change this, change that. No, I'm not. I need something different. And the guy did nothing and came back the week later. Here you go. He showed exactly the same thing. Yeah, this is great.
It often works.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. All right, well, let's get on with it. Okay, time for the Weekend Podcast. Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. It's the Weekend Podcast. It's on the weekend. It's a podcast. I'm joined by Pete and small little Stevie, who's in a toilet roll tube. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, well, it's an exciting weekend, isn't it? It's the royal wedding. Absolutely fantastic. And the weather's here, because you know what? God is looking down on Meghan Merkel and Harry there and saying, let's give him a bit of nice weather. Steve, I can hear myself coming back at myself.
Well, stop talking back at yourself.
Anyway, and I put out a little poll. I like doing polls on Twitter. I put out a little poll. Before we get into stocks and shares, I did say, okay, who would you like to have seen walk Meghan Merkel down the aisle? Because, of course, there's been this controversy all week. Will he? Won't he? Is he? Isn't he? Is her father going to come along? Is he in? Is he out? Is he checking all about? And all that stuff. And turns out he's not. And I thought, well, that's it. If he's not going to turn up, I'm not going to watch it. I was only watching for his suit and his hair. That's what I was watching for. But so these are the options. Someone said, oh, put a poll out. I said, who would you like to walk down the aisle? Turns out it's Prince Charles now. But I don't think that was a popular decision. I think they missed an opportunity here, you know? Anyway,
he's been forced into do that. Well, not him, but the royal family have forced Prince Charles.
Yeah, I think the Queen has got his arm behind his back and say, Charlie, you get down the aisle! And, but this is the options I go. So I've got, these are the options I put on Twitter. Prince Charles, Prince Nassim, Sergei Skripal. He's out. And the fourth choice is Ringo. Now, so far, Sergei's coming in second position. He's level with Prince Nassim. And I think Sergei Skripal, the Russian guy, has been poisoned. That's a great opportunity. He double crossed Russia for us, okay? Then he got poisoned by Russia. And, he nearly died. I think the least he could do now is him wake up and say, Sergei, yes, Meghan Merkel and Prince Harry would like to walk them down the aisle. He would love that. And it'd be one in the eye for the Russians as well. Wouldn't they? They'd hate that, wouldn't they? They would hate it. Steve, have you changed? Steve, what are you doing?
What do you mean? I've just got out of my car.
Okay. But
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just at the post office. I just need to pick up some packages.
What the heck is going on here? Oh, I tell you what, racing. Let me just say the results of somewhere. The most popular decision at the moment is Ringo Starr. Ringo, 45%.
Cool.
So that's looking good. I think that's it's a decent.
What's Prince Charles got in your poll there?
He's got 9%. So he's not up there. He's not even beaten Prince Charles. Not even beaten Prince Nassim. And he went down.
Yeah. I like some people have taken it quite seriously and gone, Prince Charles. Well, people are up against. No,
I think that would have really been a lovely touch. But
Right, Steve, I'm not sure this is going to work. You queuing in your post office.
Sorry, I'm just showing my ID. Hang on.
telling me on a podcast here, what is going on? There are people tuning into this podcast, listening for in-depth research. What we've got is Steve sent wrapping up his packages in the post office.
Are you sending your present?
Thank you. Cheers.
Oh, Megan and Harry.
All right. Thank you.
Steve, well, no, that card will never get there by tomorrow, you fool.
Yeah. Wedding's tomorrow, Steve.
I ordered some little bottles because I'm going on a stag weekend next week. So I've ordered these little travel bottles, 100ml, because it's pained. You can't take anything over 100ml. So I missed it yesterday, so I got to come pick it up.
Bottles for what? What are they for?
It's a fascinating
my liquid,
story.
Put my liquids in, you know.
What?
Thank you very much. Cheers.
You are such a woman, Steve.
Well, no, because I
what liquids?
Sun cream and all sun cream comes in 200 millilitres, and you can't take that in cabin bags, can
Why
you?
Why do you want to put the cabin? Put it in your suitcase.
Well, no, it isn't my suitcase, but the suitcase is in the cabin.
Steve, have you been smoking?
You know what I'm on about.
Steve was really paranoid. Yeah, he was really paranoid last week, wasn't he? About a week before, but is about someone just put replied to my tweet saying, "Are you serious with this tweet?"
That's what I mean about people taking it seriously. Some people actually are taking it seriously.
Yeah.
Well, I gotta love Twitter.
Someone has suggested Charles Bronson. He's a gentleman and a royalist, I believe. That's the Charles Bronson's inside, you know, whose name is the most dangerous man inside prison. That'd be brilliant. Just get him out for one day, Charles Bronson. He's so mad, he named himself after Charles Bronson. I think Ringo, Sergei Skripal, Prance Nassim, or Charles Bronson. I would love Sergei Skripal walking down the aisle in one of those Eastern European tracksuits they wear, you know? You know the tracksuits Eastern European prisoners? They always wear the tracksuits, don't they? I don't want to be stereotypical here, but just walking down the aisle with Merkel there, Meghan Merkel. All right, anyway, let's crack on.
Right, come on.
We should start thinking about, you know, talking about some shares or something. Okay, so let me just scroll down. I've got a list of points I'd like to read out to here on this royal wedding. But I've got to say, when I'm recording this, I am in my Union Jack suit and Union Jack hat, Union Jack socks. Yep. And Union Jack pants and
Steve's in his Union Jack mankini.
Yeah, red.
Yeah,
and I'll in the post office.
I'll be eating nothing but scones and drinking Pimm's all weekend. Right. So someone said to me, "It'd be good on the weekend podcast if you covered how to value a company, because I see a lot of people chasing stocks on Twitter, and you know, and just buying what people think. Oh, it's going to be massive. Going to be massive. Buy. Oh, is it? Yeah, it's going to be massive. Is it? Yeah, buy. Okay, that's all they need. It's like, you know, that's literally this is going to the moon. A couple of rockets on a tweet, and people will buy off the back of that. No. First of all, you've got to try or attempt" to you know, evaluate a company in any way you can do. It doesn't matter what limited knowledge you have or experience you have. You've got to try and put a value on a company, because, you know, that's how anything works, isn't it? It's like a work of art of anything. You've got to try and put some kind of value on it, even if it's ridiculous, you know, or you have no idea. So, but first of all, how do you value a company? Steve, if you look at, say, a company that generates revenues and profits, we're back in the car now.
I'm back, yeah.
Steve.
Don't worry, I'll speak up nice and loud.
Yeah, I can hear my voice coming back at me. It's annoying.
Steve, okay, can't you take 20 minutes out of your busy schedule and just talk on your phone?
Yeah.
No, because I've got a job on in about an hour's time.
Sorry to hear that.
Job on. Yeah, don't take us in the toilet. Right, so, Steve, a company with revenue and profits, how do you value that company, would you say?
I'd message you to see how that company's doing.
Okay, I'm talking about taking responsibility for your own actions, your own investments. How would you value a company?
The market cap and the share price.
Well, no, that is how it's valued. But how would you?
Yes.
So you look at the market. There's a good point, stuff. I didn't realize, Pete. We're going to go this far back. Right. Let's reverse back a bit then. Yes. Yeah, so first of all, how do you know what the actual value is of the company? That's right. Good point, Steve. That's a good point. So this is more important than anything.
What is the market cap, Steve?
What is the market cap?
Yeah. What does it mean?
What's it? The company's worth.
Yeah, how do you get to that value? How do they get? Do they just? Is it just an arbitrary figure they just chuck on it, or where does it come from?
Isn't it made at the value of the assets of the company?
No, it's not.
That's what I mean. Let's go back to the basics here. Let's get right back.
I'm glad Steve, even though he's speaking from a little small, in a tube, is with us. Because, okay, so when the most important thing of all, when you look at valuing a company, right, you cannot value a company unless you know what it's particularly valued at that particular moment. All right. So how you do that by looking at the market capitalization. Some people say MCAP, market cap. So market capitalization, what does it capitalize at? I mean, what's its capital? The capital here is all the shares in issue, all the shares, times by the share price. So if you've got, let's keep it simple, let's say you've got 100 shares in issue, so you've got to look at all the shares in issue. Now, you do that, but don't trust any website. They all are playing catch-up on this because companies issue shares all the time. So go to the last RNS... last release by a company that says issue of equity or total number of voting rights, and that will show you their entire shares. It'll say for the basis of the shareholders, this is the number you use to when working out doing your calculations on the company. So you look at that, and let's say it says, you know, we have total amount of shares outstanding 100 shares. It'll be a lot more than that, but say 100 shares. So then you look at that. That's the amount of shares in issue, and you look at the price of that share, of each share. So let's say it's £1 a share. So you times 100 shares by £1, that company's value is £100. That's its market cap, all right? Don't take for granted websites, even Vox, you know, which we try to update as much as we can because shares been issued all the time. But when it says the market cap, don't take that for granted. Always try and work it out by a calculator. So all you need to know, shares in issue times by the share price. So then you got that. Now, when you think, well, how do I know if that's good value? How do I know, you know, for example, if you go anywhere, if you go into a shop and there's a piece of art for sale, think, how do I know if that's good value? How do you know if it's good value? It was two different kinds, really. If you look at a company with revenues and profits, you look and you can judge that company on, say, the profits it's generating. That's how it's normally done. And so they'll say, okay, I'll give an example of BT. BT last year generated profit before tax, after everything has come off pretty much, apart from the tax, but they do that. They do profit before tax because tax can change for different companies. But when you've taken off all the admin costs, the cost of sales, all that stuff, and then you're left with the profit before tax, that's the figure there before anything else. Everything's come off, that's the profit they're left with. So their profit before tax is, was it 2.6 billion last year? Now, their market capitalization, which is all their shares times the share price, is 20 billion. So they're less than seven, they're valued less than 7.7 times their pre-tax profit. So that's quite cheap, because you see a lot of companies, you know, almost 10 times or more. And I say for slow, boring companies, it's quite steady around 10, 12. For exciting growth companies, you're paying for growth because you think they'll expand their profits more each year. You're looking at maybe 20, maybe up to 30, some 60. Shares like ASOS, Rightmove, they're really high up there. So, you know, because they are market leaders and they're growing quite strongly every year. So that's how you value pretty much a company. And you obviously have to look at debt and all stuff like that. That would come off the valuation because that costs a lot of money to service that debt. But that's how you value a company with profit. And sort of say, that's a very basic way. That's how it works. So then, what happens with, we deal a lot with pre-revenue companies, you know, small cap companies, because they move faster, they're more excited, there's more potential there. And I look at, and the reason why I look at companies with small market caps is because it's easy to generate, let's say a company's worth 5 million, their market cap is 5 million. It's easy to generate 5 million worth of value, you know, and double than it is if the market cap was, say, 100 million and they have to generate 100 million's worth of value. It's a lot harder to generate 100, you know, million worth of value. So let's go into this then. So how would you value, Peter or Steve, a company with no revenues, no profits, nothing? How do you value that company, Peter or Stevie?
Well, so Steve was starting to talk about this in terms of net asset value, so their actual assets they have, that under their control or whatever, in their ownership, chuck in the cash they've got in the bank. What else? Well, other stuff. I can't think of anything else. But that's kind of, that's what I would have thought.
Justin, what else is there other than cash in the bank and assets?
Well, exactly. There's a cost of a listing, first of all, right? So cost of a listing can cost a lot of money to go to a, to get on the stock market. For, you know, you have to hire, you know, solicitors, lawyers. You have to get go through the play exchanges, nomads, brokers. All it costs a lot of money. So actually, yeah, being on the actual stock exchange, and the fact that when you're on there, you can raise money by issuing equity. So essentially, it's, you know, you can produce money when you're on there. So it's a very, you know, envious place to be in. Companies that are listed, you know, can access money better than companies that are not listed, especially if you're not making any money. So it's a very valuable place to be on the stock market. So that's an asset as well. Plus, you also have, of course, the value that those assets can generate. You know, the potential. So right now, you see, if you look at resource company, minerals companies, or you know, resource companies, for example, mineral resource companies, they may have a license. They don't own the asset. You know, they don't own that land. That's owned by the government. No. But they have a license to mine it, and they give a royalty to the government or whatever the country, you know? So no one else can do that once they've got that license. So that's, you know, valuable. That's a valuable asset to have. So let's say, for example, let's make it simple. Let's say you see a plot of land, right, in an area you'd like to live in. It's just a plot of land. How on earth would you know how much that plot is worth? What would you do? Pete, Steve, what do you do? What do you do? Hey. Let's say you want to build a house on it.
Yes.
What do you do? How do you value that?
You got to take measure out. You measure how many...
Steve, keep it clean. Keep it clean. Keep it clean.
I don't know. Where would you go to value land? I don't know.
Go to an agent. Go to somebody who knows about that, values the properties and properties the land, values the land, and then, you know, get a figure.
No, but if you have to make a guess, this is what you do.
Okay.
This is what you do. You say no one around, no experts around, right? So you look around, you say, okay, let's have a look. What do I want to build on here? What do I want to build? What's the ultimate value in the end of what I'm going to build? You know, that's what you're going to look at, isn't it? What am I going to generate on here? So you say, oh, I want to build a 4-bedroom house. Okay, so you look around. Let's have a look in the area for 4-bedroom houses. How much are they worth? So you go on the road and say, excuse me, mate, I see you got a 4-bedroom house. Quite nice, actually. How much is it worth, fella? And they said, well, this is £500,000. I said, all right, I say. So you go back to your bit of land. You say, well, land is about the same size as that. If I want a bit of, I can sell it for £500,000. But how much do I have to buy the land for? How much would it cost me to make the house? And how much profit I'm going to make. So therein, you work backwards like that, you know? And so you say, okay, it's going to cost me, let's just say, it's going to cost me 100 grand to make the house. I'd want at least, you know, 50% profit on this house, you know? So you work backwards like that and say, okay, it's going to cost me 150 grand for the land, 100 grand to build it, and I'm going to almost sell it for almost double money there. That's good. So that's worth doing, isn't it? If you can get 150 grand, that land is worth doing. If you know it's going to cost you 100 grand to build it, that's good. So then you look at something like, and I'll give you an example, because I've actually gone over Fareham Crescent. And also, by the way, Monday, general meeting for Fareham Crescent. This is a particular important day. This is when they vote to issue more shares, raising up to £1 million gross, which will unlock the value in that asset they have in Spain, which is Toral, their zinc.
And will they then
asset.
Change their name as well?
Yeah, Europa Metals.
Am I right in saying as well, when that happens, the price will go down?
You've got to have a strategy. Let me just go into the value first. So what I'm saying is, if you look at the metal in the ground that they have there, that's about $3.3 billion worth of metal in that ground. But of course, you know, it costs you a heck of a lot of money to build a mine to get that out of there. It could probably cost about 100 million of that. But so what they do, they don't say, and also, of all that resource there, when they give you a resource, you can't recover all of it. You're not going to recover 100% of it. So you're going to recover, hopefully, between 70 and 90% at the best, the top end, 70% low end, and it's worth it. So what the industry came up with is almost like a net present value figure. And that means, what's the value of that asset, you know, minus the costs? Now, they haven't got that. They're doing a scoping study, which will come up with that. And that's part of what the money will do. I reckon it'll be north of $100 million. Right now, Fareham Crescent's valued at, 2.2 million. Add on the cash, if the share price goes down a little bit, probably all in with £1 million cash, or a bit less, because obviously commissions are all that. Probably market cap of 3 million. And obviously close to a million in cash.
That net asset or present asset value, that's based on the commodity prices now, like, as well. Is that, that's how they work that out?
They normally take a general consensus of loads of experts, and so it's not, you know, relative. Right. So it is, it's, and they do a couple of variations. So they'll do at this price lead, or this price, because it's got lead, zinc and silver. Mm. So they'll do it at different variations, you know, like Horizonte did. So they did, I mean, with Horizonte and Nickel, they did it at $12,000 per ton and $14,000 per ton. And now it's at the other end. So they'd be quite conservative, and then an average range and maybe a top range. So they'll do that. But I think it could be, you know, like, obviously someone said there's $300 million probably net present value of fair and present. But yes. But listen, here's a strategy. So what you do, yeah, general meetings come in. There's about a third of new shares been issued. Now, these people who've been issued these shares, some will flip them for a quick profit. You never know. You know, just get the money back. Who knows? But it's going to create a bit of pressure on the share price. But I think, you know, when that share price goes down, of course, the market cap goes down. So the company is valued at less, even though they've now got cash to develop and realize the value in that asset. So the lower it goes down, you know, this is the way you should think of shares. Rather than people worrying about share prices going down, what you're doing is you are, when you buy some shares, getting a chunk of that asset for cheaper than it was before. So the cheaper you can get a slice of that asset, the better, isn't it, really? It's like it's like buying land and developing a house. So you go to that guy, you know, say, how much for that land, fella? And he said, well, you know, and he says, 150. He said, you would want to say, well, listen, I'll give you 100, wouldn't you? You'd want to knock him down. That doesn't happen with shares. People start to panic when the share price goes down, you know? But you, ideally, if you can buy shares for cheaper, but you know what the deal is there, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you buy them for cheaper? So you get a share of the asset for cheaper than you could do otherwise. So it's odd. We really need to flip our psyche when we're buying shares. You know, if the asset hasn't changed, the story hasn't changed, you're getting it, you're getting a slice of that for cheaper. Simple as that.
Now, they're getting, I mean, lingering on the SCR, but just looking at them as an example, where they've got a big asset potentially in the ground there. Yes, it will cost a lot to get it out. They've got, they'll have funding, they'll have money, and they'll sort of say, they'll set out how they're going to use that funding to obviously try and bring to fruition the kind of the potential of that asset. What are the stumbling blocks then that could happen, you know, in that scenario? And I'm talking about value of the company. I mean, that asset has that value. That asset's in the ground, obviously, has that value. What is going to really impact any change in that value? Because that's still there. That's always going to be there. Yes, there might be stumbling blocks in terms of actually getting out of the ground, perhaps. But the value, going back to the whole value question, the value of that company and what they've got there, that's not going to change, is it? Really? Is it?
No. Well, listen, they've still got to explore. There's been a lot of drill holes, historic drill holes. They've drilled some themselves as well. And they've put all this data together. And they've come up with the JORC resource, which is, we know, it's always good to look for companies with a JORC resource. And that's that and the NI 43101, that's Canadian. One's Australian, one's Canadian. Both massive, you know, mining provinces come up with these codes that are standards that they say every company should sort of abide to, and they're a quality standard. So when you drill to their standards and you come up with this, it's officially recognised. So they come up with a JORC resource, and it shows 16 million tonnes, grading 6.9%. Yeah, and so and lead and all that stuff. So, you know, in the ground there, it's around about 3.3 billion. But, you know, like I said, they produce a certain amount a year, but they're still... it's still open to a certain size. The core of where they've been drilling is still open to the east side. So there can be a lot more tonnage there. It's a lot of tonnage for a small company. It's a big bit of acid here. But they've still got to explore. And exploring is still quite, you know, risky, you know. And even then, you never know the jurisdiction it's in. I mean, there are other mines in the area, so it's a well-known mining province. That's very good, because the local, councils and all that will be open to more permits. But like I said, there's still early exploration. There are very few companies that go. I mean, luckily, zinc is at a high, silver's, you know, quite good. All the commodity prices at the moment are quite bullish. So, you know, you tend to find when commodities not in a good place, then you have problems raising funds. But at the moment, it's looking good, and that's why I say, you know, looking at houses and, for example, look at Piers. You go down the road and look at a house, a four-bedroom house on the road, that's worth this. Oh, it could be worth that then. So, like I said, recently, a company, you know, a European zinc lead miner attracted $3 million of funding from a well-known group of investors in this area for 20% of that company. Now, looking at the size of that mineral resource, it's about the fifth the size of Fern Crescent's, that would have that would value Fern Crescent's 70 million market cap, you know? So, yeah, I mean, listen, exploration is still risky. It's an it's like I said, a lot of time has to go into this still. There's a lot of drilling has to be
and
done.
And then when it comes to actually after the exploration, if it's all successful, and that yes, it, you know, it looks like they need to go ahead and actually mine it, and it's, you know, it's going to come to fruition, that's when they would probably partner with a drilling partner, whatever, a joint venture thing that would then that would get it out of the ground. Is that right? And so that where you're saying like, it could cost $100 million to get it out of the ground, that's not something they then have to generate to actually realize that.
Well, no, they could, but I mean, it wouldn't be a problem then. You do funding. It wouldn't be equity funding. It'd be bank funding. Listen, it's very hard to get funding. It's very hard to get funding if you're a company with no revenues, no profits, and your exploration. It's well known, you know, exploration is quite risky, you know, and it costs a lot of money. So to get funding is not easy. So what you have to do is go through a certain process of proving up that asset to the point where almost like unlocking as much value in it as possible before you actually start mining it, because mining costs a lot of money. So you go through these scoping studies or it's, the scoping study is also called a preliminary economic assessment.
Feasibility.
Then you go to a feasibility study or pre-feasibility studies. Then you go, and then the final one pretty much is a feasibility study. And that's also called a bankable feasibility study. And that's when pretty much lenders and other people will not even look at you generally until you come to that stage. So that takes a lot of money going through. But in this year alone, I think a phenomenal amount of value will be unlocked by Fern Crescent by doing more drills, by doing a scoping study, and that will show early stage economics around this project. And I think, you know, in 12 months' time, if as long as Donald Trump doesn't start World War III, I think, you know, we'll look back here where we are now at a sub 3 million market cap with a million in cash to develop this out, we'll think that was crazy money. I should have chucked in my entire house and fortune into that. Do your own research, everyone. I don't want to pump the stock.
do your own research and then put the house on it.
But listen, there are investors that will not even, I mean, there's a high percentage of exploration companies that never go through to actually mining, you know?
Yeah.
And there's many, many factors involved in that. A lot of it's to do with the commodity and environment and jurisdictions. There's so many factors involved. It's unbelievable. And even down to metallurgy, like I said, you know, the stuff they're mining here has to be favourable, you know, because when you get, what happens is, you get the stuff out of the ground, you basically grind it down to powder. That's what you do. You grind it all the way down to powder so you can separate in some way or from the other ore, because obviously you are churning out like a 6.9% of zinc in the ore. So, you know, you imagine of 100 tonnes, you're only getting 6.9 tonnes of zinc, you know, in that. And that's a lot. If you look at gold, it's about grams per ton or ounces per ton. You know, it's nuts or grams per ton. You mean a couple of grams? So so you have to find a way of getting that out there. So metallurgy is testing it and make sure there's different separation processes, and there's obviously expensive ones, less expensive ones. So ideally, they want to prove to another company that the separation techniques they're using are the cheapest and more economical, and that way it'll be a project really on the burner.
Okay, so like that, valuing a company like that is kind of roughly kind of what I had in mind in terms of looking at asset, in terms of looking at the value of what it's actually got. The other kind of major type of pre-revenue company are the tech companies, or the other companies that don't have an asset as such, but have a technology or have a product or service or something that potentially could earn XYZ. So when it comes to valuing that kind of company, where they don't actually have an actual asset value, what do we do there? That is purely just looking at potential, like we've done in the past,
yes,
one or two that we've, and looking at what they're going to sell for this amount, and they're going to hopefully sell this number of this, whatever it is, and that would be valued at X.
One of the best investments you can make, right, is when someone can't value a company.
Yeah.
You can't. No one has any idea the size of the market. And two of my most successful investments have been, EVRH, which is virtual reality, and Vesarion. And when you're in a tech sector like that, And well, you know, and only that only happens to tech. You know, even biotech, yes. even biotech, you can limit the market to a certain extent by saying, you know, okay, they're looking at a cancer drug, cancer, you know, in this, or say lung cancer, you know, is worth this amount. You know, you can, yes. and that's, it may be massive, but you can still limit it. When you have a tech stock that's not valued highly, it's like sub 10 million, sub 20 million, and they're in a very cutting edge environment like graphene, which you don't know. We know it can have phenomenal impact on many sectors, you know? And I think, and someone said, what would you value more? And I, between EVRH and Visarion, I said Visarion every day. Visarion, definitely, you'd value more than, because I just
well,
said, it's unknown. We sort of know that, you know, there are people, fans of music, who will actually watch concerts with those boxes on their head. I don't know if, you know, I don't know how big that market is, but I know, I know graphene. And as yet, there's very few markets I can't touch. It's phenomenal, massive. So that's why it went from, like, it's a 10-bagger, pretty much, you know, from where, oh, I had a 9-bagger out of it so far. But yet, there's still untouched market. We don't know how big it can be. So if you find a tech stock like that, where they're into something new, and you, as yet, no one can even actually, you know, evaluate the size of the market, that is blue sky. No one knows. Buy it. Buy some shares in that company, regardless of, oh, but how would you value the revenue? And sod that. Sod it. People don't know the size of the market. It's going to change, yeah. transform the world. Buy it. You know, that's the upside. There's no, when there's no upside, you know, when your upside is not limited, it's unlimited, you've got to buy it. You've got to invest. As long as you're not buying, you know, on a spike on the chart, always be aware of the spikes, avoid the spikes. So every market is limited, you know. When you get a market that's unlimited, or people don't know about the value of it, you've got to invest in it. Upside potential is massive. And do you know what? Last week I did mention a blog I was going to write about. It was Bezant Resources, BEZANT. Same kind of management as Ferrum Crescent. And they do have experience in this area, you know. But Bezant, the issues I've got here is that they're in the Philippines, and the Philippines' new president is down on mining a little bit. He's down. Philippines is one of the biggest nickel miners in the world, and they're the biggest supplier to China. But they've, for years, have got away with it, and they've environmentally not been very conscious. And thankfully, someone have come in now, and they've you know, put the boot in their head and say, "Oh, whoa, calm down. You have to start being a bit more environmentally conscious." And they've stopped what's called open pit mining. Which is like, it's the cheapest form of mining, but it goes from surface and starts creating. Have you ever seen those layers in the rock that go down and down and down? You create these massive pits that basically go lower and lower. And you've seen them with trucks driving into them. You know, you can drive trucks into these pits. They're like little roads. They've got circular roads that go down and down and down and down. That's open pit, pretty much. It's from the top surface downwards. And they're obviously environmentally quite impactful, aren't they? They're massive things, But Bezant is not that. It's an underground mine, so it's not as impactful. Now, I looked at this, Bezant, right, and I was thinking, this is a market cap of what? 3.6 million. They've got cash. They've done quite a few fundraisings of late. They've decided to realign their assets, because when they first came on the podcast, they were talking about this other project in Choco, alluvial sort of deposit in Colombia. But they've just sold that. The two other projects are the copper-gold project, Mankayan copper-gold project in the Philippines. Now, this is massive. Absolutely massive. And the reason why I like it is copper. Copper's going to be massive. We know there's a problem with the supply in the next 5-10 years because of the EV. They reckon there's going to be a supply problem anyway, even without this EV revolution. But now they've got total recoverable metal reserves of 811,000 tons of copper. So that's recoverable. Reserves, not resources, reserves. So when you get someone come up with, first of all, resources, it's not very accurate. But these are reserves. So they say, basically, total post-tax net cash flows on this is approximately $3.7 billion. $3.7 billion. Their market cap is almost like, a 1,000 times less than that? Or what's 3.6 million? Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's 1,000 times less than that. So the total cash flow is 1,000 times less than their market cap. And they've got another project as well, copper gold, in Argentina. It's less developed, but approximately 62 million tons grading 1% copper. These are resources. And also approximately 52,000 ounces of gold. So I'm just thinking, okay, we may be in a questionable jurisdiction in the Philippines, and a jurisdiction where it's not easy to operate at the moment, but it's not on underground pits, underground mining, it's on open pits. But I'm just thinking, with that market cap and that amount of copper, that's the potential to be a big asset, you know, a decent asset for a bigger company. And I'm thinking, when the pressure sort of copper deficit really kicks in, and the share price of and the price of copper goes through the roof, and it has been rising slowly, this, I think that the value of this will go up anyway. Whatever happens, it'll go up because there's a lot of copper in the ground there. So I'm just thinking, it may take a while, but this is one of these things you've got to. I've just, you know, taken a little chunk of, and I think it's worth it because the copper demand is going to go crazy, and they've got a massive copper asset which mid-tier companies would be interested in buying. And this, by the way, in 2014, when copper was not in favour, this came under offer for $70 million. So that was back, you know, 4 years back when copper was going down in price. Right now, they do a bit more work on this, prove it up a bit more. It'll be multiples of that in a couple of years' time. So that's why I like this. $70 million was offered for. But it's worth going there. But anyway. Yes. So did you read that article, Steve? Are you still there?
Yep, still here.
Did you read my blog on the weekend about that?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
Okay. I think.
Good. Oh, by the way, on Friday, did you see the Cora RNS? Did you see that?
Yes.
It's good, yeah. Isn't it?
It was impressive.
Yeah, so I wrote a blog on Cora Gold in Mali. Tell us about the RNS, either one of you. What did you read? What did you glean from it?
Well, Lord Farmer buying a whole more chunk of it, basically. So his share of it now is like 12% of the company, I think, isn't it? Is always a good signal, isn't it?
Who's he? He's the CEO, is he?
I'm glad Steve is right here reading the blogs. I'm glad, Steve. Thanks so much for that. Lord Farr. As I say, do you know what? Cora Gold is a tiny little market cap, 7 million market cap. It's in Mali, one of the most friendly jurisdictions in Africa, and there's a lot of jurisdictions that aren't very friendly. Down the road there, literally 10 kilometres south of one of their deposits, their Tekledoku project there is Hummingbird Resources. Hummingbird Resources, 120, 130 million market cap company. They've been on the podcast several times. They've just gone from explorer to producing gold. They're producing a chunk load of money in a cash flow selling gold. And coincidentally, Hummingbird Resources owns 33.85% of Cora Gold. Think, oh, okay, that's very interesting. Now, I looked through, this is why I like doing some research on companies. So I looked through the share register of Cora Gold. On the share register, a couple of companies I couldn't work out. Turns out they belong to the Quirk family. The Quirk family, like I said, you know, sold Lion Ore company in a nickel company in 2007 for $6.3 billion, and they were the largest shareholder of this company. Paul Quirk, part of the Quirk family, is on the board, and also on the share register is the Lord Farmer. That's how it's stated, the Lord Farmer. I thought, what is that? Is that a character or something? So I looked at the Lord Farmer. Turns out it's Michael Farmer. He's a lord. He's a law lord. He's in the House of Peers, lords. And he owns Red Kite, which is a copper trading investment or hedge company. And he's personally worth $150 million. And he's also bought some more shares in the company, which was RNS on Friday. And you're thinking, why are these people, you know, Hummingbird Resources, they know their gold. They know their eggs, their gold eggs. And why have they got such a big chunk? Why is the Quirk family involved? Why is the Lord Farmer involved? And why is the Lord Farmer up in his stake? And I was chatting to, like I said, Hayden Locke last time, it was from Cora Gold. And he said, and the CEO is very understated, he's been on a couple of times, but Hayden said, yeah, this is the second drilling project, which is not their flagship. He said, this initial set of drill results is excellent. He said, the last time I saw a drill result this grade and this close to surface was in the Papillon project or company that's one of their projects in Mali, which was like 10 years ago, and that's a 5 million ounce resource. Now, you know, if you've got a million ounce resource, then it's mineable. It's worth putting up a mine. It's viable economically to put up a mine up. That was five times the size of this, and that is not even their flagship. So you're seeing, you know, these grades are very encouraging, very encouraging. And that's the most risky thing about exploration, getting the grades, finding the grades. It's literally, you know, you're taking pot shots on the ground there, you know, several metres down, you're hoping to get a decent gradage there. And so, as yet, it looks very good. And so, the fact that you've got these other big shareholders with deep pockets, long arms, deep pockets, not short arms and deep pockets like Steve. You know, yeah, so that's encouraging.
Yeah, that was good. I'm always a fan of you know, directors and people buying into it and getting skin in the game, because they don't do that for fun, do they?
Yeah, so, exactly.
Did you buy in, Pete?
I bought recently, yes, on the back of doing some research based on Justin's blog, obviously.
Yes, yeah, that's it. Yes.
Obviously.
That's it. Don't ever, of course, just buy Willy Nilly, because they're not listed, I don't think.
No, Willy or Nilly.
No. Yes, but I also like, I think I'm taking a hit at the moment, is Jangada Mines. Do you hold any Jangada?
I do, yes.
I do.
Listen, there's a cracking, they've upgraded the resource. It's looking cracking. You know, people know they need to raise some funds. That's the problem. They've left it too long. And when you got this hanging over the share price, so even on the day that they released that, the share price went up, came back down. And I mean, they need to bite the bullet. They keep saying they're not going to raise any funds below 5p, which is the IPO level, because they don't think it's fair on investors who stumped up cash to help get this company to the market. But... Well, you know, it'd be interesting to see. You know, I own a little chunk of Jangada. I like.
Oh, somebody hit my door. Hold on, I've got to go. back in a sec.
Where are you going? God, I might as well call it off on me. Because Steve going to the post office, Pete going to the door. Anyway, what I'm saying is, Steve, I like this, but at the moment they're in a technical area where they have, you know, need funds. People know they need funds. They're going to have to raise funds at a bit of a discount. The company's saying they won't do it below 5p. They're now pretty much, where they're at, Jangada. They're at 3.8. So I don't know what they're going to do to push that share price up. But at the moment, 7 million market cap, 7.6 million market cap. I think they're a bit of a bargain here. You know, if you take into account what they'll be producing in several years' time if it goes to mine stage. So, anyway, there we are. And anything else?
Oh, sounds good.
Oh, do you know what? BT is doing my head in. It's close to £2.3 now. £2.3.
Yeah. That's, we've been in it just over a year now.
Have we?
Yeah, we invested last... Yeah, so I saw when we invested. So basically, if this continues as it is, obviously we're not going to be selling BT anytime soon, it means it's going to take over 50 years to get to our £100,000.
Well, do you know what? We'll have to go down the market cap a little bit, I think, and get smaller caps. So...
Anyway. Well, no, that's not... But then it's too risky then, isn't it?
Well, no, is it? Maybe... I don't know. People say that. People say to me... Oh, I wouldn't go in, you know, resource stocks or small tech companies or microcaps because they've got no revenue or profits. Very risky. Some of my worst performers are revenue and profit generating companies.
Mm, just more risk. They're the biggest performers, but also much more risk in them. So.
Yeah, but I just think, do you know what?
And saying that though, we're in BT, which.
That's what I'm saying. Two of my worst performers are utility wise and BT. Both have revenue and profits. You know, and both are rubbish. And in fact, looking at on Friday, utility wise, is my worst performer, and BT's not far away from it. I see C4XD is down a bit. I may need to scale back into those because I bought some a bit higher, but it may be time to scale in. Who knows? What's Pete doing? Pete!
I don't know, but anyway, I got to go anyway because I got to go and pick up some current currency.
Current currency?
Foreign currency.
You are talking in a foreign currency there, Steve. Right, come on, get lost then. And,
all right. Have a good weekend.
Have a nice weekend. Bye-bye then.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Pete. Cheers. Here's me dressed in my Union Jack suit on my own. I'm going to go off and have a scone. Bye-bye, everyone.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.